VKIIIHAG. Link connected.
And the Florida State Network. Link active.
Additional transfer time, some potential maintenance activities, those sorts of things.
Marcia.
Wayne, besides possibly looking at the gap provisions, are you asking or even considering having the spacewalkers do any other checks outside that has anything to do with thermal protection systems?
At this time, you know, the EVA team is concentrating on the first planned EVA, which starts in the wee hours of the morning. So we have asked them not to do any work on that right now. At the end of the day, tomorrow, we're going to get some more engineering analysis of some of these back with the request. But right now, we've asked the EVA team to focus their attention on the first planned and as pre-flight planned EVA that we're going to execute.
Yeah, question.
Yeah, tag Fuji Television. You suggested that none of the tile dings were very serious, and I would suggest that you don't plan on going and repairing any of them on EVA. Is that correct? And also, have you ever gone back to any of those gap filler protrusions in the past and fixed those on EVA?
Well, you know, one of the things that is very important about this flight is that we have added all of these measures, the camera views, the inspection boom, the inspection boom, and so forth, to give ourselves new data. We have never previously detected a protruding gap filler in flight. It's always been after landing. So this is really kind of exciting data. As a matter of fact, the aerodynamicists were a little excited because they've always done these analyses after the fact, and now we know before the fact exactly how far these things are sticking out. So they, in some almost perverse sense, they would like to get the data and see how this really occurs during entry. So, no, we have never considered pushing them back in before because we've never, in fact, known that we had these until we landed. The other question, I want to go back to process. I want to make sure that you understand the difference between my opinion or my impression or my general feeling versus the process. I have given you the general impression that these areas of tile damage are minor. They are not of significant concern, and I think we will likely come to the conclusion that nothing needs to be done about them. But what is important is that we have a process that is very thorough, that's grounded in testing, that has very good engineering analysis associated with it, that will come back here in another little less than 48 hours and tell us, do we need to or not do something about these. So I would not rule out, I cannot in fact rule out the potential for a repair. I'm just here to tell you that based on what we're seeing and what the experts are passing along to us, it looks very much like these are not areas to be concerned about.
John Johnson, Los Angeles Times. If I remember right, or if the first gap filler that protruded is about an inch and a half, can you tell us how much the second one is protruding? And can you compare the history that you showed up earlier on the Arista?
Well,
is this larger or less than the others?
Well, the first one was protruding about 1.2 inches, and they got a little bit of an update. I think it was a little bit less than 1.2 inches. I did not bring the height that the second one is protruding, but it's about the same, you know, order of magnitude. And I certainly didn't bring the historical data. We can get that. The problem with the historical data, however, is that it is a post-landing measurement. And what they were sticking out when we started the entry is the important thing, and we certainly don't have that data. We can tell you what it was, you know, after we slapped wheels down on the ground. Did that shake them loose more? Did they potentially melt off a little bit during the entry? We don't have that data.
Kelly
Young with New Scientist for Wayne. Can you give me an idea of on launch how these gap fillers are held in place? And then, before before now, have you ever looked at why there seems to be a concentration of these protrusions after the nose landing gear door?
Well, you know, folks spend a lot of time studying and worrying about the thermal protection system. This is the first time it's been identified to me that we seem to have a cluster that we need to take a significant look at, but I'd be surprised if the folks on the thermal protection system team hadn't previously noticed that and hadn't already thought about it. So if this is, in fact, something that we've newly picked up, then that's interesting. But we're going to go off and deal with it in our process. Now, the ceramic shim is held in with what they call ceramic glue. I don't have any real technical chemical formula for you. I have not got any idea about that. The shims also have an adhesive that they are put in with, but they're mostly held in because of the very tight wedge that you got between the tiles.
Where am I? Go ahead, Craig.
Craig Cavall with Aviation Week. Same topic, Wayne. About how much higher temperature have the folks said you could get behind one, and how far downstream would it be?
Well, it increases, technically it increases the heating rate, so it's time and temperature. I have heard the numbers on the order of a couple hundred degrees. And when you're talking, you know, 2,000 degrees, that's the sort of numbers that you're talking about. And it's also how long does that extra temperature stay there? Is it short time or longer time to soak back into the tile and into the structure? Because you've been covering tiles for a long time, and I can't remember. No?
Let's get two more here, and then we'll go to hands and then come back for the few minutes we have left.
Patrick Peterson with Florida Today. The film of the external tank showed that you had analyzed and solved the problem of the popcorning. Do you yet have an understanding of the aerodynamic and physical cause of the reason why the large piece of foam broke off the tank?
Well, I have an answer for you, and I'll be happy to give it. No. No, we got to work on that.
Leo Yang with TV Asahi. Question for Wayne, please. You mentioned about the IS's request for additional days for crew members to remain being docked. I was just curious if that is simply because they needed additional transfer time, or could that be possibly because they are considering they might need extra time for the repair by any chance?
The repair to the shuttle? No, that was not part of the International Space Station team's request. Their request was from the standpoint of additional transfer and maintenance on the station. Any request to stay longer to do a repair to the shuttle would come from the shuttle team. So that hasn't been ordered yet.
Okay, let's go to Ames out on the West Coast for a question out there.
You are currently connected to the Echolink Network. F L O R I D A.
Conference.
Node number 1842.
You know, take a look at the pieces, and they will decide, or a combined effort.
Well, no. You're talking about the evaluation of these damage areas? No, this has got nothing to do with the EVA that the astronauts are going to do. The astronauts are going to go do an EVA that's got a repair demonstration for the reinforced carbon-carbon that's done on a sample box in the aft of the payload bay. They're going to rewire one of the control moment gyros on the International Space Station. There's four objectives I can't remember, but they're none of them related to these small damages on the thermal protection system. We're evaluating them using the sensors that we have put in place for this flight, and they're being evaluated on the ground.
Okay, we're back here for any wrap-up. Does anybody else have any follow-up questions? Or let's get Craig. You might be the last one.
Just to bring Kerry Murphy into the game here a bit.
Thank you.
On the radar imagery, can you discuss anything that is especially interesting? Wayne mentioned yesterday there's an indication maybe you you can see the tank resonating of sorts.
One of the interesting things that they found was during the ohms assist, they saw a considerable shockwave go through the vehicle, and I don't have any more details on it than that. The other thing is they've worked with us really closely is we've had imagery events, and these are small imagery events. These aren't imagery events that, you know, it's not the PAL vent event. Clearly they saw that. There were also, we see a lot of streaks in the plumes, Tyvek covers coming off, and they've been able to correlate really well with those events.
Anybody have any final questions?
Tarek? Thank you. Tarek Malik, Space.com and Space News. Just a clarification from Wayne about that ISS request for the additional day. When you say for, you know, that it's transfer-related, is that meaning that maybe the crew is behind schedule in terms of their own transfer, or is that a separate type of transfer that's not related to the 114 mission?
Those are additional transfers. The crew is, as far as I'm aware, on schedule and doing a transfer. This is not because the crew's behind. It's because additional items have been identified.
Tim, we'll let you wrap up.
I mean, just from the ISS request, clearly the additional day is inside the station, but has the ISS folks gotten greedy about other things, such as additional tasks on EVA 3, for example, to help them get ahead? Have you heard any interest they have in additional get-ahead EVA tasks that they would like to?
VK3HAG link.
That they are considering, have not brought forward formally, to remove a motor that rotates the thermal radiator. I'm not a station expert, so I'm not real smart about these things, but apparently they're having some problems and want to remove one of those redundant motors and bring it back so that they can do a failure analysis on it. I'm sure Bill Gerstenmaier can tell you more tomorrow, and that is they have mentioned that is a potential to be added to the third EVA.
Okay, that's all the time we have. A couple of programming notes. In addition to what's going on in low Earth orbit with Discovery and the International Space Station, there's some very exciting news elsewhere in our solar system, and there's going to be a media telecon at the top of the hour at 7 Eastern at 6 Central Time. News media only who are interested in participating in that need to call 818-354-5011. That's 818-354-5011. That's the JPL Media Relations Office. And get on that telecon. It's starting here in just a few minutes. So be sure to get involved in that if you wish. Programming notes for the mission, the charts that Wayne showed, the small videos that he showed will be on the website that we've showed you each day, and you see it there on your screen, nasa.gov/return-to-flight. The EVA begins about 3:45 tomorrow morning Central Time. It ends approximately 10:15 Central Time. The next mission status briefing will follow that approximately 11 a.m. And the full-length SRB videos, we're planning on showing that right after that. So stay tuned for all of those events upcoming on NASA TV. And with that, for the NASA TV, we'll send it back to Mission Control and back to space. Thanks.
Mission Control Houston, the Space Shuttle Discovery and the International Space Station orbiting together 226 statute miles above the Earth, now over the Pacific Ocean, just about to pass over South America. On board the vehicles, both sets of crews are in their sleep shift for the night. Shuttle crew is scheduled to be awakened in an hour and 5 minutes from now at 10:43 p.m. Central Time, and the station crew is scheduled to be awakened at 11:09 p.m. Central. Teams here in Houston, including the Space Shuttle Flight Control Team and the International Space Station Flight Control Team, are watching over the systems while the crew sleeps on board, and also working through preparing for the next day's activities on board the shuttle and station. It will be highlighted by the first spacewalk of Discovery's mission to the station. At 3:44 a.m. Central Time, when shuttle astronauts Suichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson step outside of the station, the shuttle's airlock on the right and Robinson on the left will be working on testing repair techniques for orbiter thermal protection systems or heat shields, and also a task on the outside of the space station to help continue with assembly of the complex by replacing hardware and installing new hardware. A few moments here on NASA television, we will have some video that is correlating to a major announcement that NASA made tonight from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. They announced that a planet larger than Pluto has been discovered in the outlying regions of our solar system. The planet was discovered by using the Samuel Ocean Telescope at Palomar Observatory near San Diego, California. And the discovery was announced today by planetary scientist Dr. Mike Brown of the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, California. His research is partially funded by NASA. But the video will come up in just a few minutes at 9:45 Central, 10:45 Eastern. And includes, it's a 5-minute video file that includes some still images and artist conceptions, and also interview excerpts with Dr. Mike Brown. This is Mission Control Houston, and in just a few moments we'll be switching to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California to show the 5-minute video file about the discovery of a new planet in our solar system. When that's complete, we'll return here to Mission Control Houston.
January 8th of this year, while looking through some old data that we had taken with the Samuel Ocean Telescope at Palomar Observatory, we found, much to our surprise, an object 3 times further away than Pluto and bigger than Pluto itself. We're calling this new object the 10th planet in the solar system. The planet that we found is about 10 billion miles away from the Sun. That's much further away than Pluto or any of the other planets are. And as I said, it's about the size of Pluto or perhaps a bit bigger. It's made out of the same sort of material as Pluto, we think. When we look at the surface through some very powerful telescopes on Mauna Kea, it appears that this object looks very much like Pluto does. So it probably has a surface composed of methane and maybe some other frozen ices, just like Pluto does. And these objects in the outer solar system, we've been doing a systematic survey for the past 5 years. This is a survey that led to discoveries such as Sedna that we talked about a year ago and a few other objects. And to find these objects, it's all very conceptually simple. We take a picture of the sky, we take another picture of the sky an hour and a half later, we take one more picture of the sky, and we simply look for things that move. All those stars, all those galaxies, everything else are stationary in the sky. Things in the solar system move. The further away they are, the more slowly they move. So when we saw this object very slowly moving in those 3 images across the sky, we knew, first off, we knew it was very bright because we could see how bright it was. Second, we knew it was really far away. And third, we immediately knew if it's that bright, that far away, it's going to be really big. And we immediately realized it's got to be at least as big as Pluto, if not bigger. We'll absolutely rewrite the history of astronomy textbooks. There's now a 10th planet out there. Kids have had to learn about their 9 planets for many years now, and I'm going to give them a little bit more work to do. They're going to have to learn about this 10th one, but I think they'll be excited to hear about this one.
This is Mission Control Houston. Coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll be replaying the flight day 4 video highlights package. That's coming up at 10 p.m. Central Time, 11 p.m. Eastern. This will be the last replay of the video highlights from Flight Day 4, as we are just about 46 minutes away from beginning Flight Day 5 aboard the Space Shuttle Discovery. Discovery's astronauts will be sent a wake-up call from Mission Control Houston at 10:43 p.m. Central Time. The residents aboard the International Space Station will be awakened at 11:09 p.m. Central Time. Both crews will be work with a very busy day for the first spacewalk out of Discovery's mission to the International Space Station. Spacewalk at 12:39 a.m. Central Time tonight.
You are currently connected to the Echolink Network. O-R-L-A-N-D.
Conference.
Node number 7075.
I'm Wendy Lawrence, and you're watching NASA TV.
Thank you. Leslie, good morning to you. Vegas, the wake-up music was just for you.
Shannon, thanks for that wake-up call, and I suspected that that might be mine, as it's one of the favorites of my son, Connor. I'd also like to say hi to my wife and Ryan, Caitlin, and Anna, and hope everything's going well for them and the rest of the families down there on Earth. We're thinking about them on the Columbia families, and we're ready to start another day.
And Vegas, we're ready to support you for another day, and while we have you online, we, that is the planning ship down here, we would like to congratulate you on your recent promotion to Colonel. That is absolutely super, and it could not have happened to a nicer guy.
Thanks, Shannon. I guess that allows me to say happy 16th birthday just a couple days late to my son as well. Thanks.
I think that does.
This is Mission Control Houston. I'm looking at a live view of the common berthing mechanism. It's the area on the Unity Node module that the multi-purpose logistics module will be installed onto today. From the Space Station Robotic Arm, Canadarm 2 are trained on this area. While the crew is asleep on board, flight controllers here in the International Space Station Flight Control Room were busy checking out the systems of this mechanism to make sure that the hardware is ready to support installation of the module today.
Yeah, it's a big good morning to all the EVA folks, and let them know we're starting mid-deck prep.
Mission Specialist Steve Robinson, one of the two spacewalkers on this flight, along with Soichi Noguchi, beginning preparation in the mid-deck. Noguchi are joined by Andy Thomas, who is the spacewalk choreographer for this return to flight mission, in preparing the mid-deck and configuring tools that will be used by Robinson and Noguchi tomorrow in the first of their three spacewalks out of the shuttle airlock. The other crew members will be busy with the Raffaello cargo module operations. Again, the station robotic arm that you see in motion as we speak, being operated at the robotics workstation of the Destiny Laboratory by Wendy Lawrence and Jim Kelly. There will be a series of time that will pass by so that sets of bolts can be driven to firmly install the Raffaello onto the common berthing mechanism. There are various sets of bolts in the circumference of the common berthing mechanism, the circular docking port, if you will, on the nadir side of Unity, that must be bolted in place and leak checks performed and pressure checks performed so that the Raffaello vestibule, if you will, from the Unity node into the Raffaello itself can be properly pressurized before the hatch is opened to the cargo module for the start of transfer activities.
VK3HAG Link.
In South Orlando.
The Canadarm2 has now grappled Raffaello, the first step in the process that will lead to the unberthing of the cargo module and its 15 tons of contents for installation on the nadir common berthing mechanism docking port on the Unity module. This is Mission Control Houston. You're looking at a picture of the Raffaello cargo module in the cargo bay of Discovery, grappled and firmly held by the station's robotic arm, the Canadarm2. The payload retention latches were released by Andy Thomas just a moment or two ago. He observed some minor shifting of Raffaello in the bay. So they're taking a short look at that, nothing significant to that motion, but they're holding in place before the green light is given to enable Jim Kelly and Wendy Lawrence, operating the station robotic arm from inside Destiny, to lift Raffaello out of the bay. Right down at the payload bay of Discovery, you can see the station robotic arm, the Canadarm2, with a firm grasp of Raffaello, ready to lift it out of the payload bay. Just to the right of the module itself is the pallet upon which the external stowage platform is housed at the moment. The external stowage platform, or ESP2 as it is known, will be installed on the Quest airlock on the third of the three spacewalks to be conducted by Soichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson to act as a tool shed for spare parts for future assembly missions to the International Space Station. The tasks for that first spacewalk tomorrow that is scheduled to begin about 3:45 a.m. Central Time will be to conduct sample repair techniques on purposely damaged tile and reinforced carbon-carbon samples that are located in a thermal protection system sample box at the rear of the cargo bay of Discovery. They will also remove an attachment device from the payload bay for the external stowage platform and attach it to a series of attachment devices or trunnions on the Quest airlock. They'll also be retrieving primary and secondary power cables for the external stowage platform from a tool stowage assembly and will route them appropriately in advance of the installation of the external stowage platform on the third and final spacewalk of this mission. They will remove a failed global positioning system antenna from the Zenith port of the S-0 truss on the International Space Station and will install a brand new global positioning system antenna in its place. And they will perform a patch panel reconfiguration by swapping power cables to one of the control moment gyroscopes on the Z-1 truss of the International Space Station that will restore the operability of CMG number 2, which suffered a power failure back in March due to a faulty circuit breaker system. So, with all things being equal, by the end of the day tomorrow, three control moment gyroscopes should be back in the steering authority for attitude and orientation control of the International Space Station, and by the time the second spacewalk is completed on Monday of next week, all four control moment gyroscopes should be back in operation. A good view of the grappled Raffaello cargo module under the firm grasp of the station's robotic arm, the Canadarm2, as it is slowly but surely being lifted out of the payload bay for installation on the nadir port of the Unity module, the connecting port that links the U.S. and Russian segments of the International Space Station.
Discovery Houston 2, thanks for checking, Charlie. We will need that computer for the survey this afternoon, so we would like you to get that repowered.
Copy that, and I'll put that in work, Steve.
Installation procedure of Raffaello, soon to move it at the end of the station robotic arm, as you can see in this view, from the so-called low hover position to a high hover position that will align it for installation to the common berthing mechanism on the nadir side of the Unity module. S-band communication system, this sequential still video, which is a type of system that refreshes the frames every 30 seconds while we're out of range of the tracking and data relay satellite system for Ku-band television downlink, showing the Raffaello cargo module at the end of the station robotic arm. The Raffaello is just out of the field of view on the right side of your picture. And very noticeable at the top left-hand side of your picture, the Soyuz TMA-6 spacecraft, the capsule in which Sergei Krikalev and John Phillips were launched to the International Space Station back on April 15th from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. The Soyuz docked to the Pirs docking compartment, which you see at the very upper left-hand corner of your screen, back on April 17th, to begin for what Krikalev and Phillips will be a six-month mission on the station. The Soyuz was recently relocated, undocking from Pirs, flying laterally for a redocking to the Zarya module's nadir docking port to free up Pirs for future Russian spacewalk activity. This view from the International Space Station cameras showing the grapple of the robotic end, the end effector of the station robotic arm, the Canadarm2, affixed to a grapple fixture on the large Raffaello cargo module as it is currently being maneuvered into an alignment position for its berthing to the nadir port of the Unity module of the International Space Station. Inside the cargo module, some 15 tons of supplies, the equivalent of 7.5 Russian Progress resupply vehicles that will be unloaded and used aboard the station by the expedition crew members. Some 13 tons of trash will be loaded into the module, other discarded items no longer needed on board the station that have piled up over the course of the past 2.5 years when shuttle missions have not been available for resupply capability to the station. All of that trash and unused hardware will be brought back to Earth aboard Raffaello. The robotics officer in the station flight control room reports that pilot Jim Kelly is now moving Raffaello in for what is known as the ready-to-latch position, with the pre-install alignment of the two common berthing mechanisms having been accomplished. The ready-to-latch indications indicate that the two common birthing mechanisms are ready to come into contact with one another as the precursor for the beginning of the mechanical driving of a series of bolts to form a hard mate between the Raffaello and the Unity module.
3300, the hose is yellow, and like I say, I can show it to you when we get to KU, when you get these construction workers here on KU, I can show you this too. It looks to me like it might be the right piece of gear, but the number is absolutely different from what's called out as the procedure.
Okay, John, let us take a look at it.
Okay, John, let us
This is Mission Control Houston. This view inside a cramped Destiny laboratory showing both shuttle and station crew members hard at work as preparations continue for the installation of the Raffaello cargo module onto the Unity. Soichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson wearing hard hats, if you will, to indicate that they're hard at work as onboard, on-orbit construction workers installing the module onto the International Space Station for the unloading of its 15 tons of supplies.
You think that's impressive? Wait till I show you the big hose.
The yellow now just 2 feet away from the common berthing mechanism on Unity, according to the robotics officer in the station flight control room.
Discovery Houston Air to Ground 2, no need to respond. If you could close out, look, we're going to do a mail sync.
And we now have reports that Raffaello is firmly engaged on Unity, a hard mate between the cargo module and the International Space Station.
VHAG Link.
I'd like to say good day from Oso Major and Oso Minor to all our controllers and training folks in
Station. We've got to go to ungrapple element for timeline, and that's not till after meal, I don't think. Do you guys care if we just go ahead and do it now?
Pretty amazing. We were discussing that in between conversations with the CBM guys. If you want to do the ungrapple, we can. If you want to grapple, we can do the base change while you're eating. If you want to go ahead and press through that, it might buy you a little more lunchtime.
That'd be great. That frees Wendy up for her next activity too. So we're going to finish up this procedure and then step straight into the ungrapple.
We like your plan.
Pilot Jim Kelly, who has been operating at the robotics workstation along with Wendy Lawrence on the right side of your screen, now will move to ungrapple the station's robotic arm from the Raffaello module now that it's hard mated to Unity, and will position it for a walk-off that will occur where the station robotic arm will be commanded by the robotics officer in the station flight control room to swap mated ends. Currently, the station robotic arm is mated to a grapple fixture on the Destiny laboratory. The other end of the robotic arm, there are two end effectors on either side of the 51-foot-long Canadian-built Canadarm2. The free end of the station robotic arm will grapple onto a grapple fixture on the mobile base system on the truss structure of the International Space Station, and the end effector that is currently latched onto the Destiny laboratory will be ungrappled, thus giving the arm a new base from which to operate for the next 24 hours.
We copy. We got it loud and clear with good video. And one question for you, Eileen. There's the PAO event coming up at about 1942 or so. We are going to have a little KU for that. And we were just going to offer it up. It's your choice if you want to do any of that PAO event on video or just leave it as an audio only.
I think we'll try to do video. If it's working, if we have KU at the time, we'll have the camera set up. I think we'll try to do it in the flight deck, but I'll check with Andy and take a look at the flight plan and try to deconflict it with the other activities.
You learned that a sizable chunk of foam had come off the external fuel tank upon liftoff. When did you find out about that, and what was your reaction?
It was early. It was, I believe, the morning of Flight Day 2, or sometime during the early part of Flight Day 2. I don't remember exactly, but we did find out as soon as they could get the... We got a little bit of information at a time.
And your reaction?
Well, our reaction, we were very surprised to hear that a large piece of foam had fallen off, especially in an area called the power ramp, which is on the right side of the external tank, the protuberant aerodynamic loads section. And frankly, we were disappointed to hear that had happened, but We do know that that's one area of the external tank that a lot of, there was not a lot of interior rework that was done. There was some non-destructive evaluation type inspections that took place on that area. And it was a very limited amount that we could see in those inspections. And not all of the power ramp was replaced, but maybe that's something that we can do in the future to help prevent this from happening again. We just didn't think that we'd be losing phone from that area.
What's the emotional impact of this discovery?
There is an emotional impact, and it lies in the fact that we know a lot of very fine people worked very hard on the whole question of liberation of foam and debris from the tank, and a lot of very good engineering was done, and so you imagine there's a sense of disappointment, I think, in all circles that this event happened during this mission. And the disappointing part, of course, is now that we need to go back and revisit the whole question, and that's going to take time, and a lot of new engineering will need to be done before we fly another mission, and that's going to slow down the flight program, and that's unfortunate.
Do you see this as, I guess, sort of a fatal blow to American manned space flight and to the shuttle program more specifically?
It's a fatal blow, but I'd have to say that it's a disappointment. It's an emotional disappointment. It's also an engineering disappointment because a lot of very fine people did work very hard on this problem. As Eileen pointed out, though, the area where that large piece of foam was liberated was not actually one where there had been a lot of new engineering done. So obviously there's an opportunity now to go back and revisit that.
And I would like to say, you know, there's so much more to the shuttle program. I'm looking at the Space Shuttle Discovery, which is, this orbiter has worked a lot better than I had expected. It's been, I believe, almost over 3 years since Discovery last flew. And, you know, we had expected to be more patient to work out, but it performed, Discovery itself performed flawless on the ascent, and we're up here in orbit with, you know, maybe a couple of malfunctions and micro switches, but we're in really great shape, and we know that Discovery is going to get us back to Earth safe. So there are a lot of positive things to look at, and human space flight is so important, getting our space station built, and, you know, getting on after the shuttle program with the next spacecraft that we're going to build, and, you know, the dreams and the opportunities that we have to go back to the moon and on to Mars, you know, what we're doing here is worth it, and we know that there's risk, but if we don't try it, we're never going to be able to beat the risk.
Would you like to see, I guess, more photography beyond what's going to be done today? Would you like to see them work the problem more?
Yes, definitely. It needs to be worked more. You know, we're not real-time with the ground. They're really good about letting us know what's been done. And I know that today we're doing what we're calling a folks inspection. And we've received some input on areas of tiles that we think are damaged. We know shuttle tiles are damaged in every flight. We're going to go in this afternoon and do a folks inspection. We've got to look at that information. We're also going to look, I believe, at some of the wing leading edge and get a better idea of what that looks like. So I think we have a good plan in place.
Commander Collins, NASA project managers say they know of no damage to Discovery at this point, but careful examination of the shuttle continues. What are you most worried, most concerned about right now?
Well, I would say there's no significant damage to the shuttle. Every shuttle flight has a little bit of damage. It's just something that happens, and most of that is certainly safe to come home on. And we know we do have some small damage, but we don't know exactly, you know, we haven't measured it yet. So this afternoon, we're going to go in with our cameras and our lasers at certain areas that we're seeing during the rendezvous picture on maneuver, and do a focused inspection, which can give us better resolution and better depth. An idea if there is any depth in any of that damage. Now, what am I concerned about most? Right now I'm focused on the mission. This afternoon we're going to be opening the logistics module and we're going to start transfer. It's a high priority part of our mission. Bring back the things they don't need anymore. Tomorrow we have our very first spacewalk. Suichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson are going out. It'll be the first spacewalk for both of them. We have some very important tasks to get the station back up to speed. So that's where I'm focused right now, and those are my concerns. And I think as far as the orbiter systems go, and the ground is keeping a very, very close eye on us. It's almost unprecedented.
In the event that damage is found, what are the options for getting you back to Earth now that the rest of the shuttle fleet is grounded?
Well, we don't think there is any significant damage. We do have some limited repair capability on board for tile or RCC. That would only be for a smaller type of damage. As you know, we've always had the option of staying on the space station if we knew that we could not. mission, so I actually feel pretty confident about that. That if all the effort video of the rendezvous picture round maneuver and the external tank videos, pictures that we've taken, so far show that other than the few events that came off the external tank, the orbiter itself has no significant damage, so I'm not really concerned about that right now. But we'll know for sure by the end of today or by tomorrow.
Dr. Thomas, I understand that you have some mementos on board from the Columbia astronauts. What are you carrying with you, and how much is that crew on your mind now as you carry out this mission?
This is the KE-4 TTE repeater in South Orlando.
Solid on board. It is hard, of course, not to fly a mission like this and remember the previous mission and how it came to an end. And the responsibility, of course, that we have is to continue the legacy that the Columbia astronauts carried and make sure that this mission and succeeding missions are successful.
VK3HAG Link.
I imagine they were glad to see some new faces.
Yeah, they were. Actually, it was kind of fun for me personally because I went in and met Sergei Krikalev, and I'd met him in the very same place 4 years previously on my last mission, and he remarked upon that. He said, "Nice to see you again. Same place, once more." And it was good, of course, to see John Phillips, who I've known for a number of years, and see how he's enjoying life on the space station and talk with him. As is tradition on Russian vehicles, we shared some Russian bread once we're on board, which is a custom that has existed in Russia for a long time when you visit new people, and that was kind of nice to do that as well.
Aside from the foam problems, have there been any other surprises?
That's kind of hard to say. This is my fourth flight, and after my last flight was 6 years ago, so I've been waiting a very long time. I love being in space. I think this is just it's magical up here. I love looking back at the Earth. I love floating in zero gravity. And I really love doing the mission. It gives us a great sense of accomplishment to do that. And so I would say, I guess I really don't have any major surprises. I'm just happy to be back here and happy to be part of the team.
Commander, the image analysis is not done until flight day 6 and Sunday, but apparently you've been given a clean bill of health so far. I'm wondering what your comfort level is, especially considering the close call with the foam as you think about coming back.
Well, we do know that we have imagery that shows that large piece of foam did not impact the orbiter, but we do have some other damage. It is not significant. Remember, every shuttle flight does have a little bit of damage. There's no way to stop everything, just the smaller pieces of foam from falling off the tank. So we do have some areas that we are going to go look at this afternoon. We have a focus inspection that will start in just a couple of hours. The ground, Houston Mission Control is... knows the areas through the rendezvous picture on maneuver pictures that were taken from the space station yesterday. We know where to go look. So we're going to take the lasers and the cameras in close. We're going to be able to see how big really are these areas of potential damage and is there any depth to them. Again, we don't think any of that is significant, but it's going to be good to go look at it. And it's also a good test of the system that we put together.
You know, this foam incident generated an enormous amount of interest on the ground. I've even seen editorials in more than a few papers today suggesting it might be time to retire the shuttle. I mean, it's an amazing thing to see that. What do you say to those people that look at it that way?
I don't think it's time to retire the shuttle based on this alone, but I think if you look at where the agency wants to take human spaceflight program, I think we need to continue the development of the space station, which requires the shuttle, and then after that, I think then you should address the question of what to do with the shuttle, and I think retirement is a viable option at that point. So I don't think it would be yet. I think the important thing now is to do the engineering that's necessary to fix this problem and make sure that it doesn't happen again.
You know, looking specifically at this particular incident, I was just wondering if you think you were lucky in some way. I mean, do you guys think you dodged a bullet?
Well, what I'd like to say is this is something that has to be fixed. I don't think we should fly again unless we do something to prevent it from happening again. But I'd also like to point out that, you know, we're in the Space Shuttle Discovery right now, which is operating fantastically. I mean, I was expecting a lot more malfunctions or incidents with the equipment on Discovery because it's been so long since we've last flown. But it confident. And the shuttle didn't see retired eventually, but we've got more years in them, and I think we need to get this problem licked with the external tank and keep working on it. I'm not ready to give up.
Thanks, and one more thing.
I think it's probably a bit dramatic to say that we dodged a bullet, although there's clearly some parallels in that metaphor. I do think it is important that we as an agency go back and look at this technically and try to understand what happened and understand why this particular area was not examined originally when the whole question of the foam debris came up as part of the post-flight analysis process to make sure that this problem can be properly fixed.
You are currently connected to the Echolink Network. F L O R I D A.
Conference.
Node number 1842.
Pulled up the display from the rendezvous pitch maneuver, and I'd have to say the orbiter looks remarkably clean in terms of any damage to the piles, and we watched the surveys during flight day two and saw no evidence of damage to the reinforced carbon-carbon, so we are really quite impressed by the integrity of the orbiter.
Obviously the shuttle's not going to fly again for a while. It just, what's this going to do to station?
Seems to go on now for a little bit over 2 years with two crew members. We're doing a major resupply here. We're bringing them water, logistics. We're bringing home many of the things that they don't need anymore to give them more space to work. I think we'll be able to continue with the space station in the configuration that we're in, although it's not desired. We do need to get back to three or more crew members so we can do what we need to do on the space station for exploration.
As you can see in this view, as the shuttle station complex comes into an orbital sunrise, the station's robotic arm, the Canadarm2, is now affixed to the mobile base system that is mounted to the lower portion of the S0 truss on the International Space Station.
Hey, question about how you're navigating to try to get the targets for the focused inspection. I just want to see if you're going to the options menu and then to RMS targets to get there.
Right, I'm going to check.
This view, looking at the newly installed Raffaello cargo module, as well as the Destiny laboratory of the International Space Station. Canadarm2 cameras on the station's robotic arm being maneuvered to be in the correct position to provide the television support for the focused inspection survey with the orbiter boom sensor system that should be getting underway shortly by Jim Kelly and Charlie Kamada.
This is Mission Control Houston. Again, we're looking at the views from the International Space Station's robotic arm, Canadarm2, at the orbiter boom and sensor systems business end, the sensors that will be used to scan the underside of the Discovery, looking at the focused areas of interest that have been identified by the imagery analysis team here on the ground. Preliminary imagery that has come down shows that the Discovery is looking very clean on its underside, but the engineers looking at the imagery did identify 11 different targets for this focused survey, just to be sure. And the robotic arm in motion once again, moving on to the sixth special inspection target. Again, this is going to be another tile inspection area. The junctures between reinforced carbon-carbon and tile systems on the port wing leading edge. This will be another scan using a laser camera system on the end of the orbiter boom sensor system. And here's some live television views from the International Space Station. This is a view from the end of the space station's robotic arm. Canadarm2 as it watches clearances for the arm operators on the Space Shuttle Discovery. You can see the heat protection systems of the Space Shuttle as they are backdrop by the Pacific Ocean just south of the Baja Peninsula, and that small gap between the orbiter boom sensor system and the shuttle's thermal protection system shows the tight clearances involved here.
Just a heads up, we have other modification to the scanning sequence in step 15, and on that step you will be looking for tile damage.
This is the KE Board TTE repeater in South Orlando.
We're ready to sign off, and we know that everything is in place for tomorrow's EVA, and I just wanted to pass along that the EVA team here is absolutely ecstatic with the work you've been doing so far, and are literally ready to go out the door with Steve and Suichi tomorrow. So with that, we bid you good night.
Good night from Discovery.
Good night, Ali.
VAG Link.
Control room where the planning shift of flight controllers is standing by to send up a wake-up call to the seven astronauts staying on board the Space Shuttle Discovery. That's coming in 7 minutes from now, a little later than planned, waiting until we get the secure communications link with the Space Shuttle. Wake-up call coming at 10:43 p.m. Central Time, 11:43 p.m. Eastern, just momentarily here on NASA Television.
This is the KE4TTE. I am the conference room sysop for Orlando Conference Server and a trustee for the Florida Conference Server. You're listening to live Space Shuttle downlink from NASA Select TV. We hope everybody's enjoying what you hear. The crew wake-up time is 11:43 Eastern Standard Time. They'll be woken up, and you'll hear it live from the downlink. At 12 o'clock midnight, the system that's providing audio to the conference room will have to be rebooted. There's about 5 minutes where there won't be no audio. That's approximately 12 o'clock to 12:05. I'll make an announcement when the system's back up and running. But you'll have live downlink from the time of wake up till about midnight. Enjoy the audio. Both servers are in mute-only mode. You can only receive audio. You can't transmit. I apologize for my ID on my repeater coming out through here. I'm just monitoring until I have to reboot the system at 12 o'clock. Enjoy the Space Shuttle audio, and thank you for coming into the two conference rooms. Enjoy. KE4TT, Orlando, Florida.
Machine Control Houston, still standing by for the wake-up call to be sent up to the seven astronauts living on board the Space Shuttle Discovery. We see a live view of Discovery right now. This is looking past the cargo bay. You can see one of the wings extending up on the left side of your screen with the payload bay door open over it, and the payload bay down in the corner there, a communications antenna in the foreground. And behind that antenna, you can see Discovery's tail extending over to the right side of the view, and this is coming as the Space Shuttle Discovery and the International Space Station are orbiting 222 statute miles above the Pacific Ocean.
Suichi, if you had been listening really close to the wake-up music, you might have been able to hear your own children's voices in the choir that was singing.
And thanks for the great chorus by Japanese crew of Houston, and also my wonderful family, Nikki, Yuka, Ami, and Miwa. Thanks for the great support over the many years. It's been a long wait, but it's certainly worth it. And today, let's go spacewalk.
And we're all watching Soichi. It's going to be a great day. This is going to be an absolutely fantastic day for you. And your kids are really going to enjoy watching you. And by the way, it's a special day, not only because you're making a spacewalk, you and Steve, for the first time, but if you happen to run into the ISS CDR sometime today, you might want to congratulate him because this is the start of his third year in space. He has now had 2 years in space, and this is the start of his third year, so you might want to congratulate him about that sometime today. You're welcome. And I have just a couple of notes. You are go for email. We would like you to swap cards, the image cards, for downlink. We got everything off the card that you have, and we're ready for the next one that you have. And the flight plan will be on board in about 10 minutes, and we will issue a print command. Now, just a note on your flight plan. You'll notice when you look at your flight plan that the tile board survey has been deleted for today. Well, don't get real attached to your flight plan because that just recently, in the last hour, came up for discussion again, so we might see a change there. The other big item that you'll see changed on the flight plan is that Eileen is now helping Wendy with ISS egress because Vegas and Charlie are going to be doing the RCC survey. And those are the only big items that are changed on the flight plan.
V.
We'll be looking forward to the flight plan.
Emmett, copy that.
This is Mission Control Houston. The astronauts aboard the Space Shuttle Discovery were awakened almost 10 minutes ago at 10:43 p.m. Central Time. They're awakened by a song that was sung by students here in the local area in Houston, including astronaut Suichi Noguchi's children. It was a Japanese song called Sanpo that played for Suichi, and it's in commemoration of the first spacewalk day for this mission, which happens to be the first spacewalk for Noguchi and his spacewalking partner, Steve Robinson. Astronaut Shannon Lucid, who's the CAPCOM here in the shuttle flight control room, also noted that is the station commander, Sergei Krikalev's first day of his third year in space. He has accumulated 2 years in space by living on board the space station, the International Space Station, once before, and spending time on the Russian Mir space station and two other space shuttle missions. Krikalev is on track to break the record of the most accumulated days in space, that is 740 days set by cosmonaut Sergei Avdeyev. Krikalev should pass that mark in mid-August, August 17th to be exact. Krikalev will have more than 800 days in space total. And his station crew member, flight engineer John Phillips, are scheduled to be awakened at 11:09 p.m. Central Time tonight. Shuttle and station crews slept on different sides of the hatch tonight, as hatches were closed between Discovery and the space station before they went to sleep earlier today, and that was in preparation for the spacewalk to be conducted on this flight day 5 of the mission. That was to allow for the Spatial Discovery's cabin pressure to be reduced to 10.2, 14.7 pounds per square inch that is normally at, and all in preparation for the space shuttle's airlock to be used for the spacewalk and to prepare the spacewalkers for the low pressure environment they will experience in their spacesuits. Further EVA or spacewalk preparations are set to begin soon as the crew members will wake up and work through their morning routine quickly and then start the preparations at 12:39 a.m. Central Time. That will include a special pure oxygen pre-breathe protocol or procedure that allows the spacewalking astronauts to breathe in oxygen and purge nitrogen from their system so that they won't experience the painful symptoms of the bends when they do go into those low-pressure spacesuits. Again, at 3:44 a.m. Central Time this morning, when the two spacewalkers stepped outside of Discovery's hatch.
Then Discovery, air to ground 2 for photo TV.
Discovery Houston, we're listening.
Yes, Shannon, just want to double check that we can delay total files on the D-file on the KSX machine to end the swap to the new PC card.
Only connected to the Echolink network. O R L A N G. O.
Conference.
Node number 7075.
Discovery Houston, Suichi, we did get all the files off the KFX machine, and you can swap the cards.
Okay, understood, and that includes the OCA down and DCS.
One second, we'll just verify that.
Reflector 9252.
Link clear.
IRLP node disabled. IRLP node enabled.
Node 925, the Western Reflector in Las Vegas, Nevada. Please pause 2 seconds between transmissions and key up for 1 second before talking. Link connected.
Channel 2.
OCA-TCM-TCS, and also swapped, installed the new card. Thank you.
Affirmative. Thanks a lot.
This is Mission Control Houston. The 7 astronauts on board the Space Shuttle Discovery are awake now and working through their morning routine, and will begin preparations for today's spacewalk shortly. Station residents should be awakened in a few moments by a tone on board. Crews are separated by a hatch that is closed between the two vehicles in preparation for today's spacewalk that will the depressurization of the shuttle's cabin atmosphere to 10.2 pounds per square inch from the 14.7 psi that it's normally at. This is Mission Control Houston now looking at a live view of the Space Shuttle Discovery. You can see on the left that the tail of the orbiter is extending down to the left corner. One of the wings is to the right of that, and the narrow rectangle part is the payload bay. On the left side of the payload bay is a sample of purposely damaged tiles and reinforced carbon-carbon materials that are surrounding the space shuttle and serve as its heat shield. The RCC, or reinforced carbon-carbon, as it is called, protects the wing leading edges and the nose cone of the orbiter.
V3HAG link.
Spacewalk being conducted. The two spacewalkers will work side by side at that sample pallet to test thermal protection system repair techniques. This is part of the detailed test objective, or DTO, number 848. That's including two different types of repair techniques for this spacewalk. Noguchi and Robinson will be working with the admittance wash applicator, and Noguchi will specifically be using that tool. The EWA, as it is called, is a dauber-like applicator used to apply the sticky, caulk-like mixture of fine grit silicon carbide granules and room temperature vulcanizing material to exposed tile substrate. Substance will be added to the tiles to repair shallow tile damage. The silicon tiles used in the shuttle thermal protection system both reject heat and insulate. The white silicon substrate provides insulation, while the black reaction cured glass, or RCG coating, rejects the heat. The ability of a material to reject heat is measured in terms of its emissivity. The RCG coating on tiles has a high emissivity value, while the white substrate has a lower emissivity value, especially as temperatures rise. The science behind this EWA repair involves replacing a damaged tile's coating to restore its ability to reject the high temperatures of atmospheric reentry. The admittance swash wicks into the tile substrate, providing an adhesive bond and the high emissivity, or heat rejection value. For small, shallow areas of damage in tile, replacing the RCG coating with the admittance wash will restore enough heat rejection capability for safe entry. After Noguchi is done with that application, Robinson will work with the RCC crack repair technique. He will use a space hunting cock gun to dispense a pre-ceramic polymer sealant that has carbon-silicon-carbide powder together. These are known as NOACs, which is short for non-oxide adhesive experimental. Using one of the two cock guns in the crack repair kit, Robinson will dispense the material onto one of two pallets similar to those used for plastering. He will then use one of two scrapers similar to putty knives to work the crack repair material into the pre-damaged RCC samples mounted on the pallet in the payload bay. There are four cracks and two gouges on the RCC sample, and his portion of the test will be deemed successful if one crack and one gouge are repaired. Materials experts here at NASA have estimated that cracks or coating damage as small as 2 inches long and 0.02 hundredths of an inch wide in some locations on the shuttle's wing leading edge could result in catastrophic damage to that wing. So this crack sealing method is designed to fix the type of damage most likely to be caused by small pieces of foam coming off the redesigned external tank. The NOx material can be used on any RCC location and does not require any physical modification of the RCC before doing the repair. To repair cracks, a coating losses up to 4 inches long that cannot be used to repair holes. Two portions of the spacewalk will complete the detailed test objective portion, and the crew members will clean up their work area at the DTO pallet inside the payload bay before moving on to the assembly get-ahead work that they will be doing in preparation for the two other spacewalks. Will be to remove the external stowage platform 2's attachment device, which is called F-PAD, from its carrier inside the Discovery's cargo bay, and they will install it on the side of the space station's airlock. F-PAD is where the external stowage platform number 2 will be installed on the third spacewalk of the mission. The ESP-2, as it is called, is a carrier for spare parts of space station equipment. During the installation of the F-PAD, the crew members will be assisted by space shuttle crew members operating the station robotic arm. It will be operated by shuttle pilot Jim Kelly and mission specialist Wendy Lawrence, and they will help maneuver that new piece of equipment up to the Quest airlock on the station. The two crew members work on installing the F-PAD piece of hardware onto the International Space Station's Quest airlock. Noguchi will move on to replacing a global positioning antenna, global positioning satellite system antenna, GPS antenna, on the Starboard Zero or S-Zero truss segment on the International Space Station. That antenna helps retrieve data about the station's position in orbit. And while Noguchi is doing that, Robinson will move on to some get-ahead tasks for CMG, or control moment gyroscope operations. The crew will be replacing CMG number 1 during the second spacewalk, so some of the tasks will prepare for that. He'll also perform a patch panel swap of an electrical connector that will restore power to CMG number 2, which has been inactive since March when a remote power control module failed. The job of the spacewalk will be to route the cable associated with the external stowage platform number 2 that will be installed on the later spacewalk. After that is complete, the crew members will collect their tools and head back to the space shuttle's airlock, concluding their about 6.5 hour spacewalk. After the spacewalkers exit the shuttle airlock, the hatches between the shuttle and the International Space Station will be able to be opened again so that the crew members can move throughout both vehicles, especially for pilot Jim Kelly and mission specialist Wendy Lawrence to move to the station to operate the station's robotic arm for the spacewalk. And then also the transfer of equipment and supplies can resume between the shuttle and station and the newly installed multi-purpose logistics module. Before the spacewalkers re-enter into the shuttle airlock, the hatches will be closed again. And once they are safely inside and the shuttle's airlock is repressurized, they can open the hatch between the two vehicles once again so that overnight and for the next day's work, the crew members can move freely between the two vehicles.
Houston, Discovery, Underground 2, if you're ready for the call, I can pick up putting work.
And Discovery Houston, we're ready.
You are currently connected to the Echolink Network. FLORIDA.
Conference.
Node number 1842.
Mission Control Houston, now looking at a live view inside Shuttle Discovery's cargo bay.
Discovery Airgun 2 for PGS
Houston. Houston, we are 2 minutes out from a 6-minute LOS, so planning will say good morning. And when you get on the other side, 6 minutes, Steve and Orbit One will pick you up. Have a great day.
Thanks, Shannon, and thanks for Orbit Two, Steve. You had a good night, and looking forward to seeing you tomorrow, and good morning to Orbit One.
And Shannon, just before you go for PGSCs, would sometime today somebody take a look at Wendy's
email. Her email is not being sent. I think it's working okay for everybody else, but there may be a problem with that. We're unsure about receive, and we're pretty sure that it's not being sent. So anytime somebody gets a chance to look at it, that'd be much appreciated.
Okay, we'll do that. No problem.
This is Mission Control Houston. The planning shift of flight controllers just about to leave the spatial flight control room here and leave it up to the Orbit One team to take over and walk through the first spacewalk of Discovery's mission to the International Space Station. The Orbit One team is already on a console in the space station flight control room to monitor the spacewalk. Now watching a video coming down live from the Space Shuttle Discovery and Space Station complex as the two orbit over the Middle East about 221 statute miles above the Earth. This is a view inside Discovery's cargo bay. The aft part of the Space Shuttle to the left of the view and the forward part where the crew cabin is would be to the right. Will be conducted out of Discovery's airlock. Bring the spacewalkers into Discovery's cargo bay to work on some orbiter heat shield samples. They're samples of tiles and reinforced carbon-carbon, which protect the wing leading edges and nose cone of orbiters. Of testing that will be done to try out repair techniques for those two materials should they be damaged on the space shuttle. Spacewalkers, astronauts Suichi Noguchi and Stu Robinson will also work on some assembly tasks outside the International Space Station by replacing a failed global positioning system antenna. Their station assembly tasks will include installing the platform that the external storage platform will be installed on the next space on the third spacewalk. That is the platform that will house spare parts for the International Space Station. The crew will also swap some connectors that will restore power to control moment gyroscope number 2 after a circuit breaker had failed in March. That gyroscope has not been receiving power. And we'll also perform some get-ahead tasks for replacing control moment gyroscope number 1 on the second spacewalk.
You are currently connected to the EchoLink Network. ORLANGO.
Conference.
Node number 7075.
KD4 to DOG, Pasco County 4 to USA, saying hello to Space Shuttle Discovery, QRT.
Steve Frick.
On board the shuttle Discovery.
Where it looks like you're pressing with some activities for the EVA prep in the airlock already. Be advised there's a timeline activity prior to lab grapple on your timeline for the common tracking. Step one, that will not be required. It's already done and you won't be
disturbed. Discovery for EVA.
Go ahead for EVA, Andy.
International Space Station control team, as the crew on board the shuttle Discovery with hatches closed between Discovery and the International Space Station at this hour, as they were last night, to provide the preparations required to support today's first of three spacewalks by Soichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson out of the shuttle airlock on Discovery. This view of the payload bay of Discovery as the shuttle station complex sails northwest to southeast just off the coast of China, about to begin a swing across the Pacific Ocean. 5 days, 14 hours, 34 minutes into the flight of Discovery to the International Space Station. We are in the early phase of the fifth day of the mission, and this, again, the first of the three spacewalks planned for Steve Robinson and Soichi Noguchi.
Thanks for the heads up. We'll follow along.
Board Discovery at this hour, the crew has been awake for about 2.5 hours, having completed an opportunity to read their morning messages and begin preparations for this spacewalk. Today's spacewalk to be conducted by Noguchi and Robinson, the 59th spacewalk in support of International Space Station Assembly and Maintenance, the 26th spacewalk staged from a space shuttle during the space station era, and the first spacewalk for both Noguchi and Robinson. The spacewalk itself is scheduled to begin at around 3:45 a.m. Central Time. It's expected to last about 6.5 hours.
We are on 2 for photo TV. We have new PC cards in the poor ship. You can download them.
We copy, Soichi. Good morning. Thanks for the heads up, and we'll pull it down the next KU pass we get.
Copy. Good morning.
Steve Frick talking to Soichi Noguchi on board the Discovery. In a short time from now, probably in the next 30 minutes or so, Noguchi and Robinson will be down in the mid-deck of the shuttle Discovery, assisted by the intravehicular crew members, the spacewalk choreographers for today, Andy Thomas and Wendy Lawrence, as they begin to suit up and prepare for their first excursion out into the open cargo bay of the orbiter. During the spacewalk, Noguchi will be wearing the spacesuit bearing the red stripes. He is designated as EV or extravehicular crew member number one. Steve Robinson will be wearing the pure white spacesuit with no stripes. He is EV2 or extravehicular crew member number two. The spacewalk is designed to accomplish a variety of tasks. First and foremost, shortly after the crew members get out in the payload bay and begin to set up their tools and equipment, they will be performing demonstration techniques as they test for the first time ever the ability and the opportunity to try to repair deliberately damaged samples of space shuttle tiles and reinforced carbon-carbon samples that are housed in a box at the very rear of the cargo bay, right next to a replacement control moment gyroscope for the International Space Station. They will be using several substances and materials. One is called the mittance wash, to essentially use a paintbrush type of tool to spread this substance across deliberately damaged tile samples, and a substance called NOAX, which stands for non-oxidized experimental applicator. The NOAX to be used to try to demonstrate the ability to repair cracks in a sample of deliberately damaged reinforced carbon-carbon. That activity at the outset of the first spacewalk is expected to last about 2 hours in duration in what is expected to be about a 6.5 hour spacewalk today. With that having been accomplished, the two crew members will begin to work on get-ahead tasks for the subsequent spacewalks that are planned on Monday and Wednesday of next week. They will be installing an attachment device called the ESPAD, E-S-P-A-D is the acronym, that's the External Stowage Platform Attachment Device. It will be removed from a pallet in the cargo bay of Discovery and will be installed on the Quest airlock of the International Space Station. Essentially, it's an attachment device to which the actual external stowage platform will be bolted on during the third spacewalk. This attachment rack, if you will, is to be bolted onto a series of trunnions on the Quest airlock. And again, it is the base plate, if you will, for the actual external stowage platform, which is a sort of tool platform, a tool shed, if you will, in which spare parts will be housed for future assembly tasks on the International Space Station. The installation of that attachment device will follow the routing of some power cables from the S-0 truss and the Unity module, the node, the connecting node that links up the U.S. and Russian segments of the International Space Station. Those cables to be routed from the truss and the Unity node will be eventually hooked up to the external stowage platform to provide heating.
V3HAG link.
By Soichi Noguchi during the time frame following the thermal protection system repair technique demonstration tasks. The crew will also be involved in the replacement of a failed global positioning satellite antenna on the S-0 truss. It will be replaced by a brand new antenna.
For PGSC power supply.
Hey, go ahead, Steve. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Charlie. I got three possible DC outlets for you to use. They're all in the mid-deck. Just let me know when you're ready to copy.
I'm ready to copy, Steve. Go ahead.
Okay, Charlie. First one's on the MUP. It's the J12 outlet. And the next two are on the MO63 Papa, the J2 and the J5.
It's the most convenient one and put that in work.
Thanks, Charlie.
Steve Frick talking to Mission Specialist Charlie Kamada on board Discovery as computers are reconfigured and set up on board the orbiter in support of activities for the remainder of the day. Continuing on with today's variety of tasks for this first of three spacewalks during the mission, global positioning satellite antenna is removed and replaced with a new one. That'll be Soichi Noguchi's task. There will be a series of get-ahead tasks for the replacement of a failed control moment gyroscope in the International Space Station's Z1 truss. Steve Robinson will be temporarily stowing a light stanchion on the Unity module in order to gain access to the area in which the failed control moment gyroscope is located on the Z1 truss. That control moment gyroscope in question that will be replaced during the second spacewalk on Monday failed on June 8, 2002 during the STS-111 mission to the International Space Station. It is CMG number one. It spun down rather abruptly during the course of the docked operations. In fact, the day after the shuttle Endeavour arrived at the International Space Station on the STS-111 mission and has been out of service for more than 3 years now. It will be replaced by a brand new gyroscope on the second spacewalk on Monday that is housed at the very rear of the payload bay. It is that dark object all the way in the back of the cargo bay that you see in this picture from cameras on board the shuttle station complex. Crew is in the vicinity of the Z1 truss. They will also reconfigure power cables, essentially swap the power cables in one area of the Z1 truss to restore power to a second control moment gyroscope, CMG number two, which lost its power supply back on March 16th of this year due to a failure of a remote power control module, basically a high-tech circuit breaker. So the International Space Station has been operating with just two operating gyroscopes since then. The goal is to have all four gyroscopes up and running as the primary ability to reorient and steer the International Space Station during its travels around the Earth. In association with that, the International Space Station crew, Expedition 11 Commander Sergei Krikalev, who today, in fact, begins his third year in space, an aggregate total time during his six flights in space. In about 3 weeks, he will become the all-time record holder for most total days in space, surpassing Russian cosmonaut Sergei Avdeyev, Krikalev and NASA flight engineer John Phillips were informed that CMG number 3, which has been one of the two operating control moment gyroscopes since March, has been experiencing some instances of bearing instability. And as a result, after CMG 1 and 2 are brought back online, CMG 3 will be brought offline for the remainder of this docked mission. Just to save any strain that may be imposed on its bearings due to the mated attitude control that the International Space Station is being asked to hold at various times during the 8 days of docked operations. But the goal is, after undocking, for all four control moment gyroscopes to be up and running in support of International Space Station operations in the future. One of the final tasks on the EVA today, or the extravehicular activity or spacewalk, will be the routing of power cables from the S0 truss and the Unity node for the external stowage platform installation during the third and final spacewalk of this mission. Spacewalk, which again is expected to last about 6.5 hours in duration. Pilot Jim Kelly and mission specialist Charlie Camarda will be back at the aft flight deck of Discovery and will once again operate the shuttle's robotic arm to position the orbiter boom sensor system, the 50-foot-long boom extension that is attached to the end of the shuttle robotic arm, and maneuver it around to the port wing of Discovery, and at the request of the mission management team to once again scan and survey 7 locations along the port wing, 4 different panels of reinforced carbon-carbon along the wing's leading edge.
We got called to our next one, but you can delete the 10.2 PSI maintenance. It's not required today.
Okay, well, I guess that takes care of my questions. Thanks.
Also, Eileen, while I have you, we're getting close to taking attitude control with the orbiter. We're just waiting for station's call, and then we'll let you know when we need the DAP steps.
Okay, we'll be waiting.
Mission Control Houston, 3 days, 14 hours, 46 minutes into the flight of Discovery. As the shuttle station complex nears an orbital sunset about to cross the equator over the Pacific Ocean, a good view of two of the elements now on the International Space Station. At the very top left of your screen is the Raffaello cargo module that was installed on the nadir or earthward facing berthing port on the Unity connecting node yesterday. Its hatch was opened late yesterday during the crew day, and transfer activities have been underway since then. Last night, before...
On the big loop, the station is free drift. We have checked the rates. They are good. We are ready for auto on the DAP.
And Houston and station, this is Discovery on the big loop. Copy, ready for auto on the DAP.
Dead last night, the shuttle astronauts moved back into Discovery, closing the hatch between themselves and the International Space Station crew as the two crews slept on their respective sides of the docked interface. That is required during this mission on the night before each of the three spacewalks because the spacewalks are being conducted out of the shuttle airlock, not out of the International Space Station's Quest airlock. As a result, the cabin pressure on Discovery was lowered to 10.2 pounds per square inch last night to facilitate the pre-breathing of pure oxygen by Soichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson as they cleanse nitrogen out of their bloodstreams, thus preventing any condition known as the bends from developing when they venture out in their pressurized spacesuits into the vacuum of space later this morning. Once the shuttle airlock hatch is open and Noguchi and Robinson begin their spacewalk, Discovery's pressure will be restored to 14.7 pounds per square inch, permitting the reopening of hatches and allowing transfer activities to resume. Again, the Raffaello cargo module you see at the very top left of your screen, transfer activities began yesterday following its installation, and very prominent below it is the Soyuz TMA-6 capsule that was the launch vehicle from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan back on April 15th for Sergei Krikalev and John Phillips and their ride to the International Space Station.
Yes, Steve, the Demo-63P is a new panel, obviously. I'm not sure I totally understand it, but it looks like if we plug in one of the computers into J2 or J5, that we have to switch power and lose what's on. To get J2, we have to lose J3 and 4, and to get J6 or J5, we have to lose J6. All three of those have something plugged into them, so we're still in an either-or situation. Is that true?
V.
I think the answer is we'll be fine on J2, J5, but let me get some better words, Vegas.
again, the Soyuz TMA-6 spacecraft that you see prominently in the field of view near the bottom of your screen is currently docked to the Nader docking port of the Zarya module, the original docking port for Krikalev and Phillips back on April 17th. Was the Piers docking compartment that is just out of the field of view. The Piers serves a dual role, both as a docking port for arriving Russian vehicles, as well as airlock from which Russian-based spacewalks are staged in Russian Orlan spacesuits, such as we will see on August 18th when Krikalev and Phillips down those Russian spacesuits and emerge from Piers for about a 5.5-hour spacewalk to continue the external outfitting of the Russian segment of the International Space Station. To facilitate the Piers and its use as a spacewalking airlock way and exit way, the Soyuz spacecraft was relocated by Krikalev and Phillips in a brief flyover 2 weeks ago. As they undocked from Piers, laterally moved the Soyuz a few feet down the lateral and longitudinal axis of the International Space Station, and redocked to the port that you see there, the Zarya module. The Soyuz will remain at that docking port until Krikalev and Phillips are ready to return home in October at the completion of their mission.
Currently connected to the Echolink network. FLORIDA.
Conference.
Node number 1842.
Back to the reinforced carbon-carbon survey that will be conducted late in the spacewalk activities today. While Soichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson are wrapping up their first spacewalk outside in the payload bay of Discovery, Jim Kelly and Charlie Camarda again will be at the aft flight deck of the orbiter, flying the shuttle robotic arm with the orbiter boom sensor system extension mated to the end of the arm, to scan and survey seven locations that the mission management team wants to collect additional imagery and data from on four port wing leading edge panels, panels 6, 7, 9, and 10. They're simply looking for very minor damage that may have incurred to the leading edge of that panel imagery through the laser camera system, the laser dynamic range imager sensor, as well as the intensified television camera that's mounted on a pan and tilt unit at the very end of the boom, so that they can receive some 2D and 3D contour mapping of those areas of the port wing leading edge in their ability to conclusively determine that Discovery is healthy and its heat shield, its protective heat shield, is in good shape for the trip back home.
Hey, Vegas, we apologize after looking. That was the J-12 outlet on the MUP was the MUP option.
And I think that we can grab that without losing anything else, right?
I think it's, what I understand is you'll need it later in the mission, but for today, that one's fine.
Steve, one more question for you.
Fire away.
Yeah, how do you feel about us on MO-50TPA just disconnecting the ICU DC power we won't need until entry and plugging it in there?
Discovery Houston, Eagle likes that plan, Vegas.
We'll do it that way, thanks.
Mission Control Houston, the view that you're seeing from the intensified television camera, which is part of the sensor package at the end of the 50-foot-long boom extension attached to the shuttle's robotic arm, shows a good view at the very top of the screen of the thermal protection system sample box, in which deliberately damaged samples of tile and reinforced carbon-carbon are housed. The box essentially opens up like a suitcase, exposing the samples to the open vacuum of space, and that'll be the focus of attention right at the outset of today's spacewalk by Soichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson. They will set up tools, and with a variety of tools, they will demonstrate tile and reinforced carbon-carbon repair techniques. Noguchi will be focusing on what is known as emittance wash on the damaged tile samples in the box. Emittance wash is used to coat a damaged tile to improve the emissivity of the exposed tile surface for entry. Emissivity is basically the ability to repel heat as you enter the Earth's atmosphere. Emittance wash is a mixture of a silicon hexaboride powder, which is about 20% by weight, and a low volatility perfluoropolyether oil, called Braco. The oil simply serves as a carrier for the silicon carbide powder. During entry, the oil burns off, leaving the powder coating, which would cover any damage on any tile on the orbiter's surface. This wash is very viscous in nature, very sticky at lower temperatures, and at higher temperatures becomes very thin, almost like honey. The material will be dispensed through an emittance wash applicator, which is essentially a high-tech gun that will release this substance from a preloaded knob that is turned counterclockwise to preload the pressure required to emit very small amounts of the emittance wash onto the tile in question. A series of other tools used to tampen down, if you will, the emittance wash, almost like a shoe polish brush, and essentially what amounts to spackles and other tools that will be used to spread the emittance wash evenly over the damaged tiles in that sample box that you see in this view. While Soichi Noguchi is working on the emittance wash, Steve Robinson will focus his attention on reinforced carbon-carbon crack repair techniques using a substance called NOAX. NOAX is an acronym for Non-Oxide Adhesive Experimental, and it's used for crack repair and plug sealant. NOAX functions as an environmental barrier to retard the oxidation of the carbon-carbon substrate on the reinforced carbon-carbon samples in this box. It does not provide any structural reinforcement. It's a gray pre-ceramic polymer material that's applied in a fluid paste-like state. In the vacuum of space, that substance dries to a semi-dry clay and requires some curing between the varying temperatures of sunrise and darkness that the orbiter travels through.
VK3HAG link.
Requiring curing, as we said, and it is a somewhat volatile substance which results in some outgassing and rigidization of the material during its application. The whole point of this hour and a half to 2 hour demonstration by Noguchi and Robinson is to test brand new techniques and substances never before tested in the vacuum of space, although these substances have been tested and verified in the human thermal vacuum chamber here at the Johnson Space Center for use in this first ever demonstration of the ability of crew members in orbit to repair damaged tile and reinforced carbon-carbon samples. At the very bottom of your screen is the control moment gyroscope that will be used to replace the failed control moment gyroscope on the Z1 truss of the International Space Station.
Yeah, let the team know that the nozzle installation for NOAX is complete and there were no issues. It went on very smoothly and cleanly.
We copy all, thanks.
Thomas reporting that some of the hardware that will be used to apply the NOAX material for the reinforced carbon and carbon crack repair demonstration of the payload bay has been outfitted and is ready to be brought out into the payload bay by Noguchi and Robinson when they begin their spacewalk a little over 3 hours from now. Spacewalk preparations should be getting underway at this hour as Noguchi and Robinson make their way down into the middeck of Discovery to begin the process of suiting up with the assistance of Andy Thomas and Wendy Lawrence. Again, at the bottom of your screen is the control moment gyroscope that will be removed from its berthing platform at the rear of Discovery's cargo bay during Monday's spacewalk, the second of the three spacewalks. This is a 620-pound momentum wheel that, when it's operating, rotates at a speed of 6,600 revolutions per minute. It has an angular momentum of about 3,500 feet-pounds per second. The four control moment gyroscopes provide the electrical orientation capability for the International Space Station, thus saving valuable propellant, which is the other source of orientation capability, but that comes from the Zvezda service module on the Russian segment of the complex. The control moment gyroscope that will be replaced by the one you're seeing at the bottom of your screen failed on June 8, 2002 during the STS-111 mission, the day after Endeavour docked to the International Space Station. That control moment gyroscope will be removed from the Z1 truss replaced by the one you see at the bottom of your screen, and the failed control moment gyroscope will be brought back to us for analysis. A second control moment gyroscope, CMG number 2, lost power due to a circuit breaker and power supply failure back on March 16th of this year. Noguchi and Robinson later today will reconfigure power cables while at the Z1 truss to restore power to that control moment gyroscope. A good view of two of the major components that will be involved in spacewalk activities not only today but in the days ahead by Noguchi and Robinson. Once again, this will be the 59th spacewalk in support of International Space Station assembly and maintenance, the 26th staged out of the space shuttle itself, and the first spacewalk ever for Soichi Noguchi and Steve Robinson. Noguchi will be designated as EV1, or extravehicular crew member number 1, wearing the suit bearing the red stripes today. Robinson wears the pure white suit. He will be EV, or extravehicular crew member number 2. 122 miles over the South Pacific, the station shuttle complex continues to orbit in flawless fashion. No systems issues being worked by the flight control team, either here in the space shuttle flight control room or down the hall in the International Space Station flight control room. Everything in order, as Noguchi and Robinson are now in the very early stages of spacewalking preparations that will culminate with the start of today's spacewalk at around 3:45 a.m. Central Time. These spacewalks that are staged in U.S. spacesuits are measured from start to finish by elapsed time from the moment that the two crew members put their suits on internal battery power until the time that they are back in the shuttle airlock and repressurization of the airlock begins. Russian-based spacewalks in Orlan suits are measured from hatch open to hatch close, but for today, the start time will be at the moment that Noguchi and Robinson place their suits on internal battery power until the time the shuttle airlock is repressurized.